it's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does on a Wednesday. Thank you, Chad Erickson. Good to have you all with us. A lot to get to over the next 60 minutes. Our friend Jen Mueller will stop by, Root Sports in Seattle. By the way, we're on the weekends there in Seattle, and we will be on during the weekdays there starting in July, Monday through Friday. So you'll get us actually 6 or 7 days a week. It'd be great. So we'll talk with Jen Mueller. Big news from the NBA breaking with Monty Williams being let go in Detroit. Yankees get a scare last night, but it looks like everything's going to be okay. Oilers have forced the Panthers over to Edmonton for a game 6 for the Stanley Cup final. But we start things out with heartbreaking news, really something that kind of tore all of our hearts out on Tuesday night, and that was the news that the great Willie Mays has passed away at the age of 93. And remembrances coming in from all over the sports landscape, you name it. You couldn't escape it on X or wherever you get your social media on Tuesday night. And I thought it was a great idea and a time to bring in this guy, Damon Bruce, longtime San Francisco sports talk host in the Bay Area there. I worked with him at 95.7 The Game, host of Damon Bruce Plus. Go and check it out on YouTube. The podcast also available. And I've seen him over on X a million times. I can't get away from you. Every time I turn it on, I see you there. I saw your remembrance. I saw you post something over on YouTube, I believe it was. We all knew he obviously wasn't in the greatest health. And 93 is an amazing run. But still, it just hits you so hard to even say the words. I heard Dave Fleming on the broadcast last night. What went through your mind as you got the news?
So I'm sitting there watching Giants Cubs, like top of the fifth inning, and during a Dansby Swanson at bat, John Miller just stoically breaks in with the news. The Giants have just released a statement that Willie Mays has passed away. And it was, you know, I've got a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a wife upstairs, and even the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old, Jason, knew to be quiet. Like, it was amazing. The temperature in the room changed just hearing that phrase come across the broadcast and hear John Miller make that announcement. It was a whoa moment. And again, at 93, you know, death is around the corner. Even the healthiest and greatest shape 93-year-old has to contemplate that you're close to the end. But it wasn't until this past weekend, Jason, that there was any sort of inkling that Willie was in different sorts, because we've always seen him around the ballpark. And, you know, he would be given a seat at ceremonies instead of being asked to stand for the 15-minute on-field ceremony, which at his age seemed certainly normal. But there was no sort of impending, Willie's going to be leaving us soon. And that's evident with the Rickwood series that they're about to happen at Rickwood Field. This was supposed to be a celebration of Willie Mays' life, and what a different tone this weekend in Alabama will take when the Giants take on the Cardinals in, you know, the old ballpark that Willie Mays came up through as a minor leaguer, and he's from Alabama. And when we heard that Willie wouldn't be traveling, it's the first time I thought, oh, geez, you know, Willie Mays, he's 93. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm probably not going to want to go a lot of places when I'm 93 either. I'm 49. I don't want to go to a lot of places. I don't like going anywhere these days. But man, it absolutely struck us all like a thunderbolt. And the city of San Francisco is waking up and turning the statue at 24 Willie Mays Plaza into a shrine for Willie Mays. It is covered in flowers and baseballs and jerseys and memorabilia right now. And I really believe, Jason, there, you know, it's tough that the Giants are out of town when this happens. You know, when is this funeral going to be? How do the Giants participate in the man's funeral? Because they're in Alabama playing this Willie Mays Rickwood Field series.
Do you think you do a viewing at the Giants ballpark? Do you think
yes,
you do something?
I do. One of the very first thoughts I had was like when a president dies.
Yeah, I agree. It's
like he should be laid funeral in state at home plate, and let the entire city of San Francisco enter the ballpark through the left field gate and leave through the right field gate and have all of San Francisco come through. This will take days. The line will stretch from the ballpark to Pier 39. It will go across the entire Embarcadero, and it should happen. I think it's important. And, you know, look, Jason, I think you and I are from the exact same generation. We're from generation a tad skeptic as well. And I'm not going to take and submit, have anyone submit nostalgia as the argument that this player is the greatest of all time. Like, I don't believe in nostalgia. And I've sat out here looking to poke holes in the theory that Willie Mays is the best ever. And not until Shohei Ohtani, who showed up with an ERA and all these home runs, did I even have an argument to really make, because he's so in a class photo of one of one. But at the same time, as I reject your nostalgia, a million grandfathers can't be wrong, right? From the least complimentary, most stubborn generation of men that America has ever produced, they get misty-eyed when they talk of Willie Mays. And then all you need to do as a baseball fan is go and open up his stats, look at what he did, and there's a story to tell right there. And then you get into the way he affected the culture and how, even though he may not have competed against modern athletes, and no amount of athletes from 50, 60 years ago are as good as contemporary athletes, but he did compete against the inner sanctum of baseball's legends, yes, and Hall of Famers, and he was better than all of them. He really was.
I only got about a minute here, but I got to ask you, there's been this talk on Wednesday morning of making him the new logo. How do you feel about it?
Well, it's amazing that we've lost Bill Walton, Jerry West, and Willie Mays just within a handful of weeks of each other. These are true titans of their game, and one was a logo, and if Major League Baseball was looking for a new logo, installing Willie Mays as that logo wouldn't be a bad idea. I'll tell you what, in a world of complainers and everyone not liking everything, no one's going to come to the plate saying that's a bad idea. That's for sure.
Yeah, it certainly is. And obviously the Giants will dedicate the rest of this season to him. And I'll be interested to see, you know, what kind of patch or whatever they decide to put together for that. Any ideas?
Well, someone said they should change the name of the ballpark. You know, Willie's not Oracle.
He's Willie Mays Field. Why not Willie Mays Field? Do like the A's did with Ricky Henderson.
The thing is, the address of the ballpark is 24 Willie Mays Plaza. So, you know, addresses don't change, but names of ballparks do. So I think that he's already been enshrined. Sure. Again, the reverence that is attached to Willie Mays needs no further enshrinement. Yeah. Everybody agrees that this is the true passing of a Bay Area legend and icon. And it's not just Giants fans. It's all baseball fans that mourn the passing of Willie Mays.
Damon Bruce Plus on YouTube and the podcast as well. And you can watch him on X too. Damon, let's do it again under better terms.
Congrats on your show. I'm happy for you, my friend. Great to talk to you.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022. And the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can use your information in ways that are easy to miss by just monitoring accounts and credit, like opening loans, transferring home titles, even committing crimes.
Someone got my social security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
You can do so much with a social security number that I didn't know could happen. They drained my bank account. It was terrifying.
You're even more vulnerable than you realize. Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking, even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place. Like someone trying to use your social security number, open a new loan in your name, or even commit a crime in your name.
There was a big yes button and there was a big no button. I clicked that's not me, and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will be assigned to your case and work to fix the issue on your behalf.
If something happens, you have somebody fighting for you.
All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds, personal expenses, and coverage for lawyers and experts up to $1 million. It can be dangerously easy to steal your identity. With LifeLock, it's easy to help protect yourself.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Join the millions of people already protected by LifeLock. And for a limited time, save 25% on your first year with promo code 25TV. All plans include a 60-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-710-7531 or visit LifeLock.com/25TV to save 25% on your first year of identity theft protection. Enroll now.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
All right, we continue with this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. Jen Mueller does a great job with Root Sports, on-field reporter for the Mariner broadcasts. Proud to say my colleague, too, because we're on Root Sports as well. She'll join us coming up at about 10. Talk about this Mariners team that is kind of running away with the AL West right now. But let's talk about some hockey. First, my man Sam Yarnell drops by for the first time today on the program. And before we get to Edmonton forcing a Game 6 with the 5-3 win in Florida, I wanted to give you a moment. I know you're a bit younger, and I always reference this, which maybe there's some age bias on my part the other way. But as somebody a little younger, obviously your remembrances of Willie Mays are obviously of his post-playing career. But I wanted to give you a moment just in case you had any thoughts on Mays passing away and obviously what he meant to the sports world. A lot of people do.
You're right, Jason. I don't have any, unfortunately, any memories of watching Willie Mays play baseball, but I will say this. I think the viewers of the show know by now I'm a very big baseball fan. I've played baseball since I was 5 years old, and you know, baseball is in my bloodline, right? My grandfather was signed to play in Major League Baseball. And so whenever I would have questions about baseball, I would always kind of go to him and get his opinion. And my specific memory in my Willie Mays story is this. When Shohei Ohtani came up, and I'm a huge Shohei Ohtani guy, as the listeners know, I think, you know, we're never going to see another baseball player like him. And I started to have this discussion of, is he automatically the greatest baseball player of all time? So one day I was sitting down with my grandfather at dinner, and I said, you know, Grandpa, who do you think is the greatest baseball player of all time? And he didn't have to think about it. He didn't miss a beat. He automatically said Willie Mays. At this point, I was 17 years old. I didn't really know all of the history behind Willie Mays. But you look really quickly and you realize that the guy made the All-Star game 24 times. Ted Williams said the All-Star game was made for players like Willie Mays. Willie Mays won a Gold Glove at 37 years old, playing center field in maybe the hardest ballpark in baseball history. Willie Mays was one of a kind. There will never, ever be another baseball player like him. And if you aren't familiar with the Willie Mays story, I definitely compel you to go take a look into how truly amazing that man was between the lines, because he was one of the baseball players of all time.
I wanted to let Damon Bruce kind of wax poetic and give his remembrance and his thoughts on his passing. So I didn't talk much in the first segment of the show today. And frankly, I thought that's the way to handle it, because I'm not somebody who was born and raised and spent an enormous amount of time in San Francisco. Spent a number of years there doing sports talk, but I didn't spend, you know, half of my life there or anything like that, or an enormous part of my career there. But when I was a youngster, when I was young, when I was, you know, 15, 16 years old and knew I wanted to work in sports media, I would spend my days in the library at my high school, at East Haven High School. And I was a huge stats geek and going and looking at the history of the game. And one of the names that always stuck out to me, obviously, in studying the history of the game was Willie Mays. So obviously his passing kind of struck me, because it's, you know, it's a piece of my youth, and it kind of took me back to a time where you really loved baseball before you become jaded and cynical and know too much about the game to actually enjoy it. That's what kind of reminded me of the time where I used to love baseball and love watching and love everything about it. Not to say I still don't love it, but you look at it differently when you sort of work inside the belly of the beast. That was one of the things that struck me. I want to get your thoughts on Edmonton forcing this game 6. And look, if you weren't nervous after game four, you're certainly nervous after game five right now if you're Florida.
No kidding, Jason. I mean, I think Dennis and I kind of had the same.
Yeah, Dennis Bernstein, yes.
The same thought going into this Tuesday night game after the game over the weekend, the 8-1 game where Edmonton converted the 2-point conversion after scoring the touchdown on Florida. Listen, we said it on this show, when you give up that many goals, more than you have all season long, regular or post, it does something to the mentality of a team. And we saw that last night in Florida. The Oilers never trailed in this game. The Oilers came out and they were playing like their hair was on fire, and Florida was quite frankly skating around out there like a demoralized team until, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes to go in the first period. Obviously, there are a lot of great moments from this game for Florida, the least of which, but maybe the most amazing of which, is the Tkachuk empty net save. Yes. I mean, that's going to go down in history, especially if they lose this series. That'll be an all-time moment. But Jason, we've got to start worrying about these Florida Panthers. I mean, Connor McDavid is finally starting to play like mm-hmm. the best player in the world, like we knew he was coming into this series, but couldn't tell that he was through the first three games of this series. I'm really starting to sell myself on these Edmonton Oilers. I really think that they're live in this series.
A couple of things here, real quick. One, even if Florida does win the series now, is there any doubt Bobrovsky has no shot to win Conn Smythe at this point?
Probably
plus
not.
Plus 700. Yeah. I mean, remember, he was minus money just a few days ago.
300 yeah. two games ago.
Now he's plus 700. Connor McDavid has moved to minus 175. Alexander Barkov at 250. Here's what's even more amazing. Odds to win the Stanley Cup. Edmonton right now is just plus 280. Is that right?
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be the money line for plus the next 280. Game, so, yeah.
So they are plus. That's incredible. They are plus 280 to do something that's only been done once in the history of hockey, and it was a zillion years ago when nobody remembers. I mean, it tells you a lot right now. And Edmonton, by the way, minus 122 for game six of this series coming up on Friday night.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where you get the correlation between those numbers, right? Because the 280 price is really just a parlay
yes.
of the minus 122 with whatever the book is expecting them to be in, you know, game seven, considering the book is favoring them in game six.
Yeah.
I put the air quotes there because obviously game seven still, as we're recording this and until the next game starts, if necessary, obviously. But really, Jason, I think the biggest thing for me is now Florida's got to either go on the road and win the Stanley Cup on the road, or Edmonton has to win back-to-back games, one of which is the clinching game on the road in Florida. This is turning into cinematic hockey. This is the stuff we dreamed of after thinking the series was over 2.5 games in.
I'll tell you this right now. If they win game six, they're winning game seven. This thing gets back to Florida for game seven, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. We're gonna have history on our hands. And by the way, NHL, cash in on this. You're the only game in town for the next, what, 5-6 days? You're all anybody's going to be talking about. Please don't screw this up. We're coming back with Jen Mueller next. A Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap continues. Sam Yarnell will return in 10 minutes. Get into it with him on a whole host of issues, including the news of Monty Williams' demise in Detroit. On a busy Wednesday, bring in Jen Mueller, our good friend, Root Sports. She hosts a fantastic show. And I always get the name wrong. I Cook You Measure.
I Cook You Measure. You got it.
She's on Root Sports. She's on Root Sports, where we are on the weekends. And I'm happy to announce, and I can announce that we will be on 5 days a week, 6 days a week, if you count the weekends, starting in July. So I can announce that. I've been told by my
congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah, by
cool.
the way,
very
that's
cool.
fun.
Yep, we're like even more colleagues now than we've ever been before. She also does a great job on the Mariners on pre and post on field, all that stuff, and she works on the Seahawks radio team. She is one of the busiest people I know. She is a grinder, which is why we love talking to her. People are going to be surprised that the NBA season just ended. And hockey will soon be over. We'll see how all that turns out for Edmonton and Florida. They're going to be surprised when they turn around and look, and the Mariners are like 9 or 10 games up in the AL West as we hit July. Like, this is crazy.
It is the largest division lead in Major League Baseball right now. Now, there's a couple of divisions, I mean, that surprise teams and things that are playing out in other divisions, but I have to think that on most people's radar, when you look at the AL West standings, considering how strong Houston has been the last few years, and Texas is coming off a World Series championship, I'm pretty sure that that's going to be surprising to a lot of people to see that. And the rest of the way out, the Mariners have the easiest schedule, if you look at strength of schedule, of any team in baseball.
Jen, who saw this coming? I mean, off of last year, where last year felt like the letdown from 22, I am convinced that last year was a hangover from 22, that it had a lot to do with what we saw last year. And it felt like this thing was kind of going in the wrong direction. Everybody complaining about what the team wasn't doing in the offseason, the additions they weren't making. Where is this coming from? Is it a product of the AL West just being craptastic and the Astros getting off to such a slow start? I mean, they just released Jose Abreu. Texas, you know, not getting the starting pitching. I mean, what is this a product of?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a lot of things. Number one, going into the season, you looked at the Mariners starting rotation and you said, you know what? That's going to be a tough rotation to deal with. And if you get a guy like Andres Munoz, who's hot in the back of the bullpen, like, this is going to be tough to top their pitching. Everybody knew that going in. The question was around offense. Still a little bit of a question mark. I do think, though, that had Houston and Texas gotten off to different starts, it would look different. Not that the Mariners wouldn't still be on top, but those teams have faced massive injuries in their starting rotation. Now, Texas is going to get a little bit healthy here in the next couple of weeks. Houston is still dealing with injuries in their starting rotation. What you have seen from the Mariners is, outside of Brian Wu kind of trying to figure out what's happening with that forearm elbow area thing, everybody has stayed really healthy, and they are dominating in quality starts and in just mowing through opponents the first and second time through the order.
What does it mean for this team? The deadline, you know, the trade deadline will be here before you know it. Does this team go out and add payroll? Does it trade a prospect? What does that look like for Jerry DePoto, Justin Hollander, knowing that there was so much criticism of this team not making additions? I got to imagine they're sensitive to that. Do you see them making an addition? And if so, where?
I think you'd have to make an addition. I think they're probably reticent to spend a lot of money to make that move, especially, and I guess it depends on who it is, right? Like, if it's just going to be a rental player versus somebody like Eloís Castillo that they signed a couple of years ago, who is now turned into one of the bedrock pieces of that starting rotation.
Franchise.
You do have a lot of talent. Yes. Yeah, you do have a lot of talent in the organization, so there are trade chips available. I think probably what you need is another hitter. I'm not sure that that's an easy thing to find at the deadline, because everybody wants a nice bat to kind of help on this run. But as weird as this is going to say, you actually need a little pitching help. That bullpen has been up and down. Andres Munoz has been dealing with a back thing. Your starting rotation has been super healthy, but once you get like one more starter in, you don't have as much depth at that spot. So I would not be surprised if they add kind of both things. And if they end up focusing on pitching and understanding that their offense is getting better in the last 4 to 6 weeks. And if that trend continues, I can see them skipping a bat to focus on pitching, because pitching has been what's gotten them here to this point.
And Jen, we've sat here in this segment's 5 minutes and 45 seconds in. We haven't even talked about the fact, Julio Rodriguez is just starting to heat up.
Yeah.
And he's a second half guy.
He is a second half guy. And I think more importantly for Julio, the guys around him are starting to hit too. I mean, you are seeing a little bit more consistency up and down the lineup, whether that is Mitch Garver in that DH role, who is getting more time behind the plate, which is kind of freeing him up at the plate just a little bit. Ty France comes back from injury. He was hot before he got hurt and had to miss a couple of weeks there. You're just starting to see some better at-bats. Dylan Moore has been a huge contributor. And so, yes, Julio heating up is going to be a big thing, but having the guys around him is just as important to his success, so that you are forced to pitch to him and he's got just a little bit of protection there.
Who do you think, if there is a team in the West, and this might be asking you to go a little deeper into your bag of tricks than you may want to, if there's a team they are worried about in the West, who is it? Is it Houston? Just because they've been there so long?
That is a little bit tricky. I actually think because of the injury status of both Texas and Houston, I think Texas would be more poised to make a run because I think they are going to get healthier faster. They also have guys on that team that know what it's like to put their foot on the gas at the end of a season and just go for it.
And Texas will make moves too. And Texas has shown they're not afraid to make moves.
Texas is going to make moves. I will say, if the Astros, again, starting pitching, I think the Astros are probably going to make moves too.
Yeah.
The Astros, I believe, have the second easiest schedule for the rest of the season, right behind the Mariners. So there's some room there. But I think, honestly, even though the Mariners are coming off a 3-game sweep of the Rangers, honestly, I think that's the team that you got to be worried about.
Jen Mueller, host of I Cook You Measure on Root Sports. Catcher on the field during the games, too. Always appreciate it, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
The one and only Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday. Thanks to Jen Mueller for hanging out with us. And a busy show today. Still plenty more to do. Coming up in 10, lifetime exemption for Eldrick Tiger Woods. And I'm not sure how I feel about it, to be quite honest. And I know that's not a popular thing to do in sports talk, is to kind of be straddling the fence. Not really sure how I feel about it. We'll get into that coming up. But a developing story out of Detroit on Wednesday morning, where we found out that Monty Williams, just 1 year into a 6-year deal with the Detroit Pistons, has been fired. He is owed 5 years and $65 million, Sam Yarnell. What the hell is going on in Detroit?
Jason, I wish I had a good answer for you, my man. I don't know.
I don't either.
For all intents and purposes, I don't want to say this because it's not all the way there. But like, the Pistons should be on track, not necessarily at the same place, but they should be on track to kind of sort of be in the same place that the Thunder are. Now, that's not to say that the Thunder have done an average job and Sam Presti is just an okay GM, right? The guy should be a Hall of Famer for the turnaround he's had in OKC alone. But when you look at the capital that this team has had over the last 5 years, even 10 years, really, I just don't understand how they continue to draft these letdown players who can't turn the franchise around. And the thing that compiles on top of that for me is like, yeah, that makes sense if it happened like twice or three times even, but it's happened 5 times with the Pistons where they've had first round picks that just straight up didn't pan out. You can't do that as an NBA franchise. Do I think that that has anything to do with Monty Williams in year one of a 6-year deal? No. Do I think that that's deflecting from the front office, who may actually be catching on to what the real problem is? Probably. But we'll continue this crazy cycle that is the NBA.
Yeah, and we've had changes in the front office there, and that obviously had a lot to do with how all of this played out. Look, I know Monty Williams is a religious man. He's a very faith-based kind of guy. This is the greatest thing that could have happened to him. The greatest blessing. The blessing! It is the greatest blessing that could have happened to him to get out of that dumpster fire alive and still have and still be young and vibrant. And there's still, and for as late as he got fired in the process, there's still two head coaching jobs that are sitting out there right now that he's going to be a candidate for. There is no doubt in my mind, given how, you know, strangely the Lakers have handled this, this vacancy they have. By the way, if J.J. Redick wasn't hired yesterday, the day after the NBA Finals, after Dan Hurley's already turned you down, it tells me that job is still open. Because if Redick was going to be the guy, that would have been done already. That would have been a wrap. Now it makes you wonder, does Monty Williams become a candidate for that opening? The Cavaliers still have an opening. Here's a team that is, I mean, if you assume they keep Donovan Mitchell, which had to be part of the process in J.B. Bickerstaff being fired. If you assume they're keeping Donovan Mitchell, that might be a better gig right now than what the Lakers have, because the East is more viable than the West. So if you're Monty Williams and the Cavaliers come calling, even if the Lakers do come calling, the Lakers might get rejected again. Because if I'm Monty Williams and your choice is the Lakers with LeBron in the final year or two, assuming he doesn't go to Philadelphia, just saying, the idea of the Laker job versus the Cavalier job, to me, it's a no-brainer. I'd take the Cavaliers job.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, you kind of just laid it all out. But on top of all that, you don't have to worry about the GM, which is great. And I think that's a whole thing that we're not recognizing here, Jason, is that, like, as much as LeBron has said that he's not involved in the Lakers coaching search, do any of us really believe that when the Lakers are still the heavy odds-on favorite to draft Bronny James? I'll tell you right now, I don't. I don't buy one of those two things. I think either LeBron's not at all involved with the coaching search, or the Lakers are going to draft Bronny. Those two things cannot both happen, because there's no way LeBron is not hands-on involved in the next coach for his son if he has any power to be. We know the GM. We know the greatest player in basketball history, and he has every right to do that. I personally, right, at the end of the day, this is just how I feel in my Prince of Picks mind. I think there may have been a little bit of a falling out between JJ and the GM after the whole Dan Hurley thing happened. And yeah, I think during a taping of their podcast, between scenes, JJ was just like, hey, the GM, what the heck happened with that whole Hurley thing? And I think the GM looked back at him and said, you know, I got no idea. The problem is Pelinka's got a great relationship with Woj. Hurley's got a great relationship with Woj. And they just used each other against each other. Or they just used Woj against each other in UConn and the Lakers, which is fine. But that very easily could have driven J.J. Redick away from this job. It would drive any competent basketball mind away from this job who doesn't have prior coaching experience. Monty Williams? You might get sucked in.
You've got one shot to break the seal, sort of, you know, for your first NBA head coaching job for J.J. Redick. I still don't know if that job is the Lakers, given the instability around that organization and the instability around head coaches there. We're coming back with something to consider in Tiger Woods next. We proceed on this Wednesday, odds and ends right around the corner. A lot of baseball nuggets to get to. But first, Sam Yarnell, something to consider. I saw the news on Tuesday night, and anybody who watches this show by now, or has listened to me over the years, or watched me over the years, knows I am as big a Tiger Woods fan as you will find. He is must-see, drop everything, spend 5 hours in front of the TV watching him shoot two over. It doesn't matter. I'm still all in. because of what he did in 2019 at the Masters, I will never just give up on him. But this move by the PGA Tour that was announced on Tuesday night kind of took me by surprise. I don't think any players are going to come out and bash the PGA Tour because they're giving Tiger Woods a special sponsor exemption based on his exceptional lifetime achievement to play in the 8 elevated events that the PGA Tour has. The final one being this week at the Travelers Championship. Obviously, Tiger's not playing. But I'm not sure how I feel about the idea that the PGA Tour just carved out this special Tiger rule. I don't even know if he's going to take advantage of it. I wonder if they carved it out because they know that next year he might want to take advantage of it, and it might be a way for him to get more practice leading into the majors, and an opportunity for him to sort of, you know, work on some things in actual tournament play. And if anybody's watched this show recently, you would know that I've said Tiger deserves the right to retire on his terms. He should not be forced out of the game. It shouldn't be people on social media saying, why are you talking about Tiger Woods? He's not relevant. He hasn't won in 5 years. He's earned the right to walk off the stage when he feels he can no longer compete at the level he wants to compete. Who knows? That might be the end of this year after Royal Troon. It might be 2 or 3 years from now. He's earned that right. But it feels to me like the PGA Tour is almost trying to keep him on the tour because of the relevancy he still brings when he comes to an event. People are going to come. They're going to buy tickets. They're going to watch on TV. It almost feels like they're trying to force the issue by creating this carve-out. What did you think when you saw it?
Yeah, I agree completely with you, Jason. They want to sell tickets. It's fine. You don't have John Rahm. You don't have Bryson DeChambeau. You want to sell tickets? Yeah, bring me Tiger Woods. It makes a lot of sense. The reality of the situation is this, Jason. Tiger Woods has won one major in the last 16 years. In the last 10 years, Tiger Woods has finished top 10 in a major 3 times. 10 years, the last 40 majors, 39, we haven't gone through all 4 this year. The last 39 majors, Jason, Tiger Woods has 3 top 10 finishes. As much as I, as a golf fan, appreciate this because it lets us see the greatest golfer of all time for just a little bit longer, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel fair. It doesn't feel like he earned it. It doesn't feel like his play at all has been reflective of someone who they should want to keep on the tour indefinitely. I love Tiger Woods. When I was a little kid, I'm talking like I was like 7 and he was like on top of the world winning multiple majors a year. That was incredibly fun golf. And at that point, he probably had earned it. And if he would have stopped golfing then and they would have given it to him, yeah. But he kept going and he kept playing in these events where he would finish at the bottom and miss the cut. And when you do that, it just takes away the credibility in my mind to earn something like this. So I'm with you. It feels like a purely capitalism driven move.
It feels antithetical to the argument that the PGA Tour has about some of the things LIV Golf is doing, where it's about earning it. It's about eating what you kill. Well, Tiger Woods is basically getting 8 freebies in the largest event. And again, I hate being the guy that has to point this out as a Tiger Woods fan. But you're giving Tiger 8 freebies at this stage of his career. You're taking an opportunity away from somebody that could potentially get that exemption. And look, I don't even know if Tiger's going to take advantage of it. I think there are so many question marks surrounding him going into Royal Troon, whatever, a month from now, that we don't even know if this is going to matter, if it's going to play out. I just wasn't a fan of them creating basically the Tiger rule. In acknowledging and look, put a statue out in front of him, in front of every golf course that you play an event on, if you want. I don't care. Name a tournament after him, but I don't need him getting 8 special invites into these events.
It feels, just really quickly, feels to me a little bit like the PGA Tour is compensating. And for as long as you and I sat here on this show and discussed, hey, how close is this deal? How close are Liv and the PGA to getting back together? How close are we to seeing these best golfers in the world actually play on the same tour against one another, week in, week out?
Mm-hmm.
That discussion has only gone further and further by the wayside, and it's only drifted further and further back into the shadows. This is how they bring in those fans, like you said, Jason, while knowing they're not bringing back John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, right. Justin Thomas anytime soon. I'm sorry, Dustin Johnson, not Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I got you. And Jay Monahan, in this same memo and conversation with players, talked about the Liv deal. Obviously, it's still not done. We see where that is right now. Everybody keeps saying it's gradually getting closer. That remains to be seen. This thing was supposed to be done a long time ago. All right, odds and ends. Wrap up the show next. We'll get to some baseball. All right, just about time to wrap things up on this Wednesday edition of the show. If you miss anything from the program, we have this thing called Sports Wrap with Jason Page Podcast Edition. You can watch it, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn. All sorts of different ways to catch this show if it may not necessarily be on at the same time every day, depending on what affiliate you're watching us on. Again, we'll be on Root Sports every day. I don't know what time yet, but starting in July. So we're just, a couple weeks away from that. Very excited to be on there every day. We're on the weekends now, but we'll be on there every day. Of course, our friends in Massenland, you're going to appreciate what we're about to talk about because it's time for odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. Thankfully, not the end for Aaron Judge. Got drilled in the hand last night. As the Yankees beat the Orioles to even that season series at 2 games apiece. Yankees win. Yankees win. 4-2 was the final. Judge plunked in the hand, taken out of the game an inning later. Trent Grisham went in his place. X-rays negative. There's a chance he could play Wednesday night. There was some swelling in the hand. We'll see if the Yankees keep him out for a day just for precautionary reasons. He could not swing the bat, though, after he got hit. For a guy who's had a broken wrist or a broken hand before, you certainly get nervous. You've seen what's happened with Mookie Betts recently. You certainly get nervous. Yankee fans can breathe a sigh of relief. Aaron Judge is going to be okay. I would not be shocked, Sam Yarnell, if you saw retaliation from the Yankees. In years past, I would say no chance. It is not the Yankee way to do that sort of thing. But I would not be shocked with Gerrit Cole on the mound tonight, who is not afraid to throw at or near somebody. I would not be shocked if you didn't see retaliation for that last night because several Yankees, Gleyber Torres got hit. You had pitches up and in, near the hands, near the head. The Yankees made comments about it after the game, particularly Alex Verdugo. This is a different Yankee team with Soto and Verdugo on it. Different attitude around the team. I would not be shocked if you had fireworks in the Bronx on Wednesday night. And by the way, real quick, Jason LaConfora, because I know this is Massenland, and the Baltimore fans will appreciate this. Jason LaConfora, pipe down, okay? The rhetoric from this dude, and I like Jason LaConfora in general, but the rhetoric coming from this guy on X, you can go look it up yourself because I'm not going to run through all of them. Calm down, dude. It's baseball.
So here's the thing. First of all, Alex Verdugo, I truly and honestly cannot roll my eyes loudly enough at you. Alex Verdugo doing the same thing he's done since he was in Boston. That's beside the point. To the point about them retaliating. In the series between the Yankees and Orioles, April 29th to May 2nd, mm-hmm. 4 Orioles were hit, including Gunnar Henderson, in the exact same spot as Aaron Judge. If the Yankees do in fact retaliate with their best pitcher on their roster, who is making his season debut after having his entire season put into question because of injury, if they're actually foolish enough to waste one of his pitches or one of the batters he faces with a fastball to the ribs after your best player didn't even get hurt, and if he did get hurt, it's something being bothered in a prior injury, but no one's ready to have that conversation because Aaron Judge never gets hurt, never misses time, and never has injuries that linger. If they are silly enough to waste one of a top five pitcher in Major League Baseball's pitches and batters faced by putting a runner on base for the team in second place in your division, which is the closest contended division in baseball, it is the most outlandish, foolish Yankees thing possible.
I don't know if I'd go so far as to say, it's the most outlandish thing, but it would not shock me. It just,
A benches clearing brawl would be more outlandish.
Could happen.
I will agree I will agree with you there. We can agree on that. To the Lock and Fora thing, I'm not going to sit here and stand up for someone else, but there is one thing that I will say with regard to something that he tweeted that I actually did agree with, and that is about Juan Soto, quite frankly. Juan Soto injures Jordan Westberg last night in a play that Juan Soto has made countless times in his career. This is a kid who, if you go back to his rookie season, has had a horrible time running the bases. And the fact that he hits so well and plays such good defense really completely makes up for the fact that he is a bottom tier base runner in the league. So he makes another blunder running the bases last night.
Do you think it was intentional, though? Do you think it was intentional?
I don't think it was intentional. It's bad base running. Yeah. It is bad base running. It's not intentional. It's unacceptable at the major league level to not know how to run the bases to that degree. I will say that. And I'll also say the lack of comment towards it after the game and lack of sympathy or apology for injuring the seventh best prospect the Orioles have and an everyday player for them. It just didn't come off quite right to me. So as much as this could continue to boil over into Wednesday night, Jason, I would be really shocked if it does. These teams got to let this stuff go and play baseball,
man. Yeah, I tell you. Yankees got their butts whooped by Baltimore a lot last year. They're not going to take it lying down. We'll see how it all plays out on Wednesday. We'll have a total coverage for you on Thursday. Brian Kenny on the show tomorrow as well. Thank you to Jen Mueller. Thank you, Damon Bruce. Thank you to you, Sam Yarnell. I am Jason Page. We'll see you back here on Thursday for more Sports Wrap.